Hello and welcome. I'm Claire and you're listening to Microbe Talk, the podcast by the Microbiology Society. In this first episode of 2024, I'm joined by Rick Mumford, Deputy Chief Scientific Advisor and Deputy Director of Science, Evidence and Research at the UK Food Standards Agency. He's here to chat about his recent publication in Journal of Medical Microbiology, which reported on the Food Standards Agency's AMR program review. In this episode, we'll discuss research, surveillance, and the future of AMR in food.
So fabulous. Yeah, so my first question is always, are you able to introduce yourself?
Yeah, so my name is Rick Mumford, and I'm Deputy Chief Scientific Advisor at the Food Standards Agency.
Fabulous. So the reason why we've got you on the podcast today is for your article, which was published in the Journal of Medical Microbiology. So it's Foodborne Antimicrobial Resistance Research and Surveillance in the UK, priorities identified through the Food Standards Agency's AMR programme review. That article sort of summarises the outputs from an event reviewing the FSA's AMR programme and identifying new challenges in food-related AMR. Could you explain, I suppose, the background of that event, what led to it, and what the event was sort of trying to achieve in more detail?
The Food Standards Agency, the FSA, has been involved in antimicrobial resistance research and surveillance for getting on for 20 years now, since it was formed in 2000. And what we're really keen on understanding is, what role does food play in the possible spread of AMR? As we all know, AMR is a massive challenge. The O'Neill report from 2016 highlighted the sort of threat that it posed to us. And actually, lots of people around the world, but in particular, the UK government has been doing a huge amount to try and mitigate those risks. And it created its 20-year vision. And then it's been operating on a 5-year national action plan, which started in 2019 and actually finishes next year. Mm. So part of what the FSA does within the national action plan, the NAP, is that it looks after the sort of food work stream, if you like. So we're doing the work to try and understand how that fits together with the other work that's done in, say, health or animal health or within the environment. Because the NAP is very much a cross-government programme. It works across all departments, and it also tries to take a really one health approach. So it looks at all the elements of how human health, animal health and environmental health, including food, sort of work together, and how we can create a joined up solution to mitigate those risks from AMR.
Just to reiterate for everybody who's listening, so the One Health program is this kind of concept of working collaboratively within multiple different sort of disciplines as well as internationally. Is that kind of correct? And then also accessing sort of from various areas related to public health, not just kind of from medicine, etc. Is that the right way to describe it?
Yeah, I think that's a pretty good description. I mean, certainly the international aspects are important. You know, AMR doesn't respect boundaries. So, you know, we import a significant portion of our food. Is that a source of AMR coming into the country? You know, people travel. So we do have to look at the international aspects. But also, if you think about the sort of different sectors and how they interact, you know, we use antibiotics in humans that can drive resistance. We use antibiotics in livestock production. That can drive AMR as well. And then, of course, then you have the bits in between. So, you know, if animals are generating AMR, then that's getting into the environment through say, their feces or whatever, or it's coming through from the food itself on pathogens, foodborne pathogens that might be on that food that are carrying the antibacterial resistance genes, then they can move through. And of course, we're also caring more and more about antifungals as well. So it's not just antibacterials. So AMR is quite a broad church.
Yeah, definitely. You also kind of talked about this national action plan. There may be people listening that perhaps aren't as familiar with it. What's kind of a brief introduction to the National Action Plan?
So it was a 5-year plan, and it was across a wide range of government departments, and it's also a four-nation approach. So, you know, Northern Ireland, Scotland, Wales and England all involved in and all having their deliverables within it. And It had a number of different strands. So the theme, the area that the FSA was involved in was around agri-food and environment. And we were then contributing various pieces of work to that to try and sort of understand how that the agri-food system worked in terms of the possible spread of AMR. So, for example, we would be running surveys on the incidence of antimicrobial resistance and pathogens carrying that on things like meat that we would sample from retail. But of course, then that joins up then with other agencies like the Veterinary Medicines Directorate, the VMD, that were doing work on looking at AMR within livestock and production systems. So then joining up, and can we see trends within livestock, and can we then see the sort of following on trends in meat and other food products?
So from what you're saying, you know, surveillance is essentially the beginning and the kind of cornerstone in delivering on the National Action Plan targets and working cross-disciplinary. That's a kind of key part of that sort of review article that's published with us. I suppose, what are the challenges of kind of surveillance of antimicrobial resistance? And what were your sort of key findings, you know, based upon the sort of programme event that you took part in?
Yeah, so the programme itself was designed, it was a 2-day event. We had about 70 experts came in from different departments and different academic disciplines, and also then the people who've worked with us in the past to deliver our programme of research. And as we said, we've had quite an extensive programme. I mean, we spent about £1.5 million on AMR surveillance and research over the last 3 years.
Wow.
So we had that opportunity to both look at what we'd done and then review it going forward and see where the sort of gaps in our knowledge still existed. And that included surveillance, but also research, because we've funded some research projects as well.
Yeah.
And I think one of the key things is that we've been doing surveys for some time. Initially, these were done as part of the EU harmonised programme. So this was a sort of EU-wide sort of programme. But we're continuing that work now. And one of the things we found is that over time, a lot of the AMR and all the antimicrobial resistance genes have sort of dropped in food. So we've seen some significant drops in levels since we started some of those work back in 2014. But what we are seeing as well is that understanding that the risk is reasonably low, that the incident is reasonably low. We aren't seeing a significant level of resistance to things like colistin, which is some of the sort of antibiotics of last resort, some of those really, really vital antibiotics that are really essential to protecting human health. We're seeing levels of resistance genes there being quite low. And actually sometimes, again, it links to your point earlier about international, because some of this stuff is on imported food. The one thing we do have to state, though, is as well as, of course, what we are looking at is raw products. So we're looking at raw meat, things that are intended for cooking. And of course, that will very much, if things are properly cooked, then they will obviously reduce that risk of it transmitting then through to humans.
So you talked a little bit about some of the challenges. Is that kind of all encompassing? Are there any more sort of challenges with surveillance of AMR in the UK?
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the big challenges around many areas of both AMR, but also foodborne disease and pathogens causing foodborne disease is, can we make better use of the new technologies? And when I mean new technologies, the obvious one is whole genome sequencing. You know, we're so able to do so much more now very readily look at the hot genomes and identify and characterize and identify pathogens so much better. So we have this new power that's available to us and much lower cost than ever used to be. But the challenge we all still have is, how do we share that data better? Mm. And obviously sometimes you sort of get into a space where there's sensitivities around data, maybe commercial sensitivities about data. You know, if you're talking about human health, you have patient sensitive data. So you have to consider very carefully about how you join up. And of course, one of the things, if you do join up the data in that one health space, you can make much better use of it in terms of control plans. So you might identify outbreaks of things or identify things in humans and then be able to maybe track them back to where they came from, so the ultimate source, and then through that then implement better control plans and mitigations. And one of the things we have been doing is through a shared outcomes fund, Treasury funded a program called PathSafe, which is Pathogen Surveillance in Agriculture, Food and Environment, which is led by the FSA, but has over 50 different partners from across government and academia and industry. We've been building things like data systems that exactly designed to join up and use and better utilise the power of whole genome sequence data.
What were the outcomes of being able to join all of this data together? Was there any like key findings that you were really surprised by? Or is it more kind of on a granular level?
So the PathSafe program is still going at the moment and is still working on developing that program. So what we're hoping is to start generating a lot of the data now, and we'll start to be publishing that very soon.
Okay.
And then from that, we'll be able to start feeding into sort of new mitigations and new action plans. And one of the things that we're hoping is, of course, is that some of the stuff that we've been doing in PathSafe, in the current program, which finishes in March next year, is it can then feed into the new national action plan, the UK national action plan, which is due to start. And the FSA, alongside other government departments, has been very active in developing that new plan. And again, things like surveillance will be a major pillar within that new program.
Obviously, surveillance is the sort of basis of this program. How are you foreseeing perhaps integration of AI and things like that in these types of surveillance programs? Is it something that you're considering? What's your sort of thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, artificial intelligence obviously gives us a massive opportunity to automate. And actually, some of the data system we talked about, the PathSafe data system, which is there for comparing and aligning sequences, uses a lot of bioinformatics. And of course, things like bioinformatics and data analytics is a massive area where AI has the potential to be very widely used. So again, I think that's probably one of the sort of key areas going forward for our work where AI could have an impact.
Okay, so tracking it back slightly to the National Action Plan, you mentioned obviously that there's a new plan sort of in the works at the moment. In your article, you mentioned that the FSA successfully delivered on these National Action Plan targets. Could you sort of give me a background on what they are and how those targets were achieved?
Yeah, so we had a range of targets. I mean, one of the key ones was to gather this understanding of where AMR was in the food supply chain and what the incidence was and whether that was going up or going down, and through in particular the surveillance program. And so we carried on those surveys. We've done looked across a number of different commodities. So we've done red meat, we've done poultry meat. We've got new surveys that have just started looking at salmon, for example. So fish is a new area. And again, that was something that was reinforced by the review that we did. It's talked about in the paper as well. We would hope in the near future to then also look at things like fresh produce as well. So we're trying to sort of fill the gaps in all our in our knowledge. The other thing that we did as well as the surveillance is we'd also looked at aspects of research as well, and things like in production systems, is there evidence that for example, biofilms in forming in production facilities might be harbouring AMR. So also trying to understand some of the basic knowledge about how AMR operates, because surveillance is fine. It tells you what you have and where it is, and maybe what the level of that is. But I suppose the big question that we still need to answer, and some of the research we've done has helped, but there's more to be found out, is about how. So if you find AMR, if you find antimicrobial resistance genes on fresh meat, what is the actual risk and how might that transmit into a possible infection, or how much that might transmit across into pathogens that then might cause human infection? So it's so we've understanding a lot more about the where, but we still need to understand a lot more about the how.
And I suppose, like you mentioned, with the kind of raw products, they're likely to be cooked, etc. Whereas I suppose it's a different kind of beast with the fresh products.
Yes, exactly. That is one of the challenges. And again, a lot of the things that came up in the review were thinking about products where things aren't cooked or aren't thoroughly cooked. So again, those might present more of a risk because they're eaten, as you say, fresh or raw.
And how much does your suppose choices on surveillance reflect like trends, I suppose, with consumption? There's a bit of a movement at the moment away from milk, for example. How much do you alter what you're looking at depending on kind of consumption?
Yeah, we do. So some of the things we have done is look at consumer consumption data. So we get that to try and understand the trends, because again, if you think about risk, it's having a hazard. So AMR is the hazard, but then you need to consider the total risk will be about the exposure. So if we're eating large amounts of something or an increasing amount of a product, then that's more exposure to us as a population. Hence, the risk goes up. Or the other way, if the exposure goes down, if we're eating or consuming less of a product. So yes, we do look at that. That's all part of the consideration. And again, we would always have a list of ideas of things where maybe we want to consider more in the future and build those into future plans of what we might target.
Okay, amazing. So interesting. I had a question, I suppose, about my tracking back a little bit. You mentioned about the sort of EU harmonised programme and how that's still carrying on. How has Brexit, for example, how has it impacted your kind of ability to collaborate internationally within sort of Europe, or has it provided perhaps advantages to collaborating elsewhere?
I think in terms of the direct impact on what we've done, as we've said, we've just been able to sort of continue with the work. We've carried on the same sort of design and the same sort of content, mainly because of that continuity of data.
Yeah.
So those surveys had been going on for some years, and I think it's a really important thing for us to continue, which is why we have done, even though we're now outside of the EU. We will hope that in many cases, the scientific collaboration internationally has continued. So we're still able to talk to scientists on a science to science basis, even though maybe some of the political channels have maybe ended and some of those sort of have stopped as Great Britain left the EU. But that sort of ability to continue talking through science has been very important for us.
Oh, that's kind of beautiful. Continue talking through science. I like that. Has it affected anything with kind of the change to imports and exports? That's quite, I'm assuming, going to be quite difficult with their use of antibiotics in farming, for example.
Yeah, and absolutely. So I think increasingly things like AMR and antibiotic use in livestock is being considered when you're thinking about trade.
Yeah.
Because again, if it's seen as a driver, I mean, from a UK perspective, I mean, obviously the government's just published the latest results of antibiotic sales in livestock, which is something called the VARS report. And again, it's a very positive picture. It's showing that yet again, we've seen a decline in overall usage of antibiotics in animals that are for human consumption. And that's a very promising trend. And I think overall, the total use of antibiotics has dropped by a significant amount since the data started being recorded in 2015.
Yeah, I mean, and antibiotics are still sort of used in animal feed, if I'm correct. What, I suppose, steps are being taken to reduce this? And do you think you'd be able to completely eradicate this in the future?
So I think overall, in livestock usage, you've got to be very clear that there are times when animals get sick and there is a need to use antibiotics, and it's a welfare issue.
Yeah.
So if you didn't treat them, they would be suffering. So it is really important. But I think what has been shown, and a lot of this has been not just through government, but also working with industry, and then there's industry voluntary groups such as Rumour that have had a major influence as well. They have been able to take it out. So the the sort of routine usage of antibiotics has dropped massively and has been taken out. So some of the sort of very bad practices of old have stopped now. And the figures from the latest VARS report just show in so many areas how limited antibiotic usage is.
Mm. And just for those who are listening that might not be sort of familiar, you mentioned the kind of old ways of antibiotic usage. Could you kind of explain how they used to be used in livestock?
Well, there was in some cases they were used as growth promoters.
Mm.
And they were sort of given routinely to animals, which is obviously a very bad practice because you were using very large amounts and not for specific disease or illness prevention. So I think the stopping of that as a practice had a major benefit on mitigating the risk.
Mm.
But again, to say that a lot of this has been driven by industry, so they've been very proactive in taking the steps, because, as I say, I think all of us realise just how important AMR is as a challenge.
Yeah, definitely. So I suppose, my final question is always, what's next? How are you going to go about implementing the findings from this programme?
So the review that was characterised in the paper has already been useful in going into our AMR research and evidence programme and trying to look at future priorities. So we're trying to think about the projects that we're going to commission in the future.
Mm-hmm.
And some of those key ideas have been some of the targets that came out of the review. So that's already been very influential in terms of setting our priority. And then through that also, the commitments that we're making that will be published early next year for the new National Action Plan. So that's really key. But also a lot of this is not just about what the FSA is going to do directly, but also how we work with others to deliver some of this stuff. And, you know, some of the more basic research questions are sort of best handled by someone, you know, funded through UKRI, and maybe the BBSRC is a research council in the sort of in that space. And again, we're talking to the UKRI about ways that we can work together and develop ideas. And of course, there's other initiatives going on in that space. So under the UKRI Tackling Infections Programme, there's a call out at the moment to develop new AMR research hubs. So these would be transdisciplinary, bringing together people from all sorts of disciplines and policy, etc., to try and look at how we can further understand the problems and generate solutions for AMR.
Wow, that's exciting. So then there's a sort of new national action plan sort of in the works, as you mentioned. How do you foresee the FSA engaging with that?
So we've been working with other government departments to create that new plan. A lot of what we're going to be doing is more of the same in terms of things like surveillance. So carrying on the commitment we've made to understand that surveillance and how it then incredibly useful evidence for working with others. So those who are monitoring antibiotic use in an AMR in livestock, then can we see the signatures of that coming through or that impact in the food supply chain? But we're also carrying on other work that we've started in the previous National Action Plan, but moving forward is things like consumers. We do a lot of work at the FSA on understanding consumer views and insights in matters related to food. And one of the things we have been doing is asking people who in food businesses, but also just general consumers, what they understand about the risks associated with AMR and food. So we will carry on monitoring that and to see if we're getting through with the messaging, because some of this is about surveillance, some of this is about research, but also does the general public understand the threats and the risks associated with AMR, and are they playing their part, and can we do more to educate them?
Yeah, definitely. And then finally, the UK's aim is to contain and control AMR by 2040 in this sort of longer 20-year action plan. Are we on track? What do you think about this in the future? do you think we could get there?
I think the UK has made significant strides in that ambition. There's still a lot to be done, but it has made major strides. And as I say, just to focus on the bit that I'm most familiar with, which is around the agri-food system.
Yeah.
As I say, we look at the reduction in antibiotic usage, or certainly as sales of antibiotics for livestock production, and that has been a very, very significant decline. And that's a very positive thing. I think if we then look at the data the Food Standards Agency's generating in terms of levels of AMR and AMR genes that we're finding on food, that's been declining. It's slightly plateauing, but it has been declining. So again, we have got a good sense that certainly in the food system, we don't think there's a huge risk at the moment, but we will keep on monitoring. We can't be complacent, and we have to keep working to try and reduce that risk even further.
Fantastic. That's amazing. Thank you so much for taking the time to have a chat with me. It's been so interesting. Is there anything that you'd like the audience to engage with to keep up with your sort of research?
Yeah, so actually one way, if you want to keep up to date with what the FSA is doing in the science and evidence space and updates on research reports, for example, because we publish them all, we do have a sort of science newsletter that we publish on a quarterly basis. So if you go to the FSA website and look under About Us, you'll find the science and evidence pages, and then you can sign up for it there. And that's been incredibly popular. A lot of people, we have about 2,000 subscribers to that now. So we're very happy for more people to subscribe and follow what we're doing across not just AMR, but a whole range of different areas of science.
Amazing. Perfect. Yes. Thank you so much. That was brilliant.
You can find Rick's paper and details of how to sign up to the FSA's newsletter in the description. If you've been inspired by this episode and want to find out more about what you can do to tackle AMR, follow the link in the description to visit our Knocking Out AMR project page on our website. You've been listening to Microbe Talk. If you like this episode, please leave a like or a comment wherever you're listening.